Hey, Let's Coach Mike here, letscoachmike.com. Another great podcast with our good friend, Coach Mike Murphy from Penn. Now the all-time winningest coach in Penn's history. What an unbelievable season they had last season. He's the all-time winningest coach with 75, 2019 unanimous Ivy League Coach of the Year, 16 All-Americans. Just a great, great coach and a great friend of the site. I think you're going to love the podcast. You know, there's some great drills in here as well as some general coaching dialogue that I hope you enjoy. I'm humbled by all of your support. Thanks so much. It's Lex Coach Mike, LexCoachMike.com.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. See how I went right into the radio voice, Coach? That was pretty cool, huh?
That was impressive. Threw me off.
Yeah, right. After, you know, I, every time we do a podcast with Coach Mike Murphy from Penn, you know, we close and say, man, we can't wait 3 years before we do another one. And here we are, you know, 3 years later. But, yeah, I'm not sure Lax Coach Mike is a much better company than it was 10 years ago. We've grown. But certainly Penn is a pretty killer program now compared to what was, you know, when we started with you in 2011. So congratulations and welcome back, Coach.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. And great to be with you again.
Hey, just you know, recapping a little bit, you know, like way back when we talked, not all the time, but you would integrate the four-quarter practice plan, which we have like five or six, you know, coaches are pretty steadfast with that.
Huh.
And I don't know about Tambroni recently, but he used to do that too. I haven't talked to him in
really?
A couple years. Yeah, anyway, and then the last time we talked, you kind of, I don't even want to use the word traditional, because I think you're pretty creative. You went, you know, back into maybe a little bit more of a traditional practice plan, as a lot of coaches were. You know, that's one cool thing about my job. You know, I mean, I get to hear the trends from the coaches, you know, and what guys are doing differently, and it's interesting, you know, how it becomes almost mainstream. But anyway, like a lot of coaches that had gotten away from, you know, a lot of 6v6 work, you were getting back into it a little bit at the time. And I have a quote written down here. Hey, man, we got to defend 6v6 25 to 35 times, situational 6v6, and still coming back to your master's in education, if you will, on the parts of the whole, so on and so forth. But, you know, over the last couple of podcasts, you made a number of comments about evolving in the practice plans. Anything happened in the last two or three years that you think you do differently than you did before that, Coach?
Mike, I would tell you that from 2018 to 2019 and carrying into this year, it's probably been the most significant change in practice that I've experienced in however long I've been doing this. And I would tell you that the probably number one key to it would be energy, and that takes a lot of forms, and there are a lot of things that go into that, but the energy that we practiced with and hopefully the energy we played with in games was much higher than it had been since I'd been here probably. Yeah, little things like, you know, playing music at practice and just the pace of drills. Our mantra last year was pace and passion, and hopefully we played with those things. We tried to incorporate drills in practice that utilized those things and rewarded those things. And we probably went away from, you know, more of the 6-on-6 that we'd been doing, you know, a couple of years ago, and did a little bit more transition, even, you know, unsettled, like half field unsettled, that isn't a transition but an odd numbered thing, whether it be 3-on-2 like West Jenny, or, you know, half field build up things and stuff like that, where the pace of the ball and the bodies on offense were rapid and it put some pressure on the defense to communicate and recognize and do things like that. So I would tell you that we have evolved drastically since the last time we spoke.
It's almost retro, right? I mean, because the first time we talked, I can remember, and only a handful of coaches were doing it at the time. And it's interesting, man. You know, a lot of coaches, like up until like last year or so, but you were one, I can remember when we talked back in 2011, God, are we that old?
Yeah.
You know, you came out and it was a 3v2 right out of the gate, you know, to get the pace of practice up and get the energy and everything else. And then we started to see a lot of that. Believe it or not, kind of seeing a reverse of that now, the coaches we do podcasts with. And it's probably inappropriate for me to mention the names because it comes off a little negative in this connotation only. But like top five coaches or top 10 program coaches, you know, I got one that actually starts with 20 minutes of wall ball, man-to-man, 5 yards apart, catch right, throw right, catch right, throw left, toss-handed. It's literally a wall ball drill with two guys, and in every rep they take like 3 steps back. You know, I'm listening to this going, you can't argue with the guy's success, man.
Right.
But if I was a coach, to me, that's like fingernails going down a chalkboard. You know what I mean?
I mean,
I want to get up and go. The kids want to get up and go. Or, I mean, let's get up and go.
Yeah.
And we come back and, you know, you've always integrated some station work in and other stuff like that. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon. And, again, it's a cool thing for LaxCoachMike.com to be able to listen to all these trends and what's going on, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. And the more I do this, the more I realize that there isn't a singular right way to do anything, really, whether it's shooting or defense or practice planning. You know, it's got to fit the group, and every group's a little bit different from one year to the next and one program to the next. And, you know, I think people have to do what they're comfortable with and be themselves.
Yeah, the only thing that I would add to that is, you know, I think the millennial factor is definitely an influence.
Oh, no doubt.
It's so much smaller. I mean, we try to not run the same drills 2 days in a row just to keep their attention span up. You know, I think I can't remember doing a podcast in the last 6 or 7 years where they didn't have a clock on the field, they weren't timing the drills and creating that sense of urgency. You've always integrated that with the competition element. Are you still running the four tribes?
We are, yep, same four tribes. And every day we try to do at least one or two things that are competitive. Sometimes it might just be, you know, a star drill stick work. Other days it'll be, you know, some scrimmaging. Like yesterday we did a little four-on-four across the field competition, like 5-minute games with all short sticks. So it varies, but the tribal thing drives a lot of what we do kind of throughout the year.
Yeah, for the listeners, just on the search box on my site, just put in Coach Murphy Penn, and I wrote a whole article on it because I thought it was so cool and a great way to start to build teamwork in the fall and integrate the guys in. And I don't want to rehash it, but, yeah, go back and look at it, man. It was really interesting. And incidentally, you know, out of 100 and whatever it is now, 65 or 70, 170 hours of podcasts, I've never seen anybody else do that. You know, I mean, that's pretty cool.
I don't think I came up with it. I think I stole the idea from a couple of different people.
Yeah, you did, and I wish I could remember the guy's name so we could give him credit, the guy that's the AD now.
Aaron Quinn gave me gave me the idea, and some other people have, I'm sure, added to it over time.
So when the kids get there, you come right out, you let them do, are they doing shooting stick work on their own before you actually get into the practice, and are you coming out electric with a 3v2 or a 4v3?
Yeah, we generally start most days, almost every day this time of year, with something like that. Yesterday, we have a new version that Coach Abbott brought to us called Mason Dixon, where it's a 3-on-2 right into a 4-on-3, and basically you get 3 minutes of offense. So two tribes against two tribes. And Team A, let's call it tribe, you know, Mohawk and Cherokee, say, are Team A, and the other two tribes are Team B. Team A will come in on a 3-on-2, and then those three guys will now play defense against the four offensive guys from Team B. And we'll do it that way for 3 minutes, and then we'll flip-flop who has the 3-on-2 and 4-on-3 and keep a running score.
So that's the three guys that were on offense – stay in the drill, and then four new guys come into the drill?
Correct, from the other color. So three white come from behind into a 3-on-2. The three white guys are on offense, three white jerseys. And they play that out, whatever happens, happens, blow a whistle, and now they immediately jump to defense, and they're defending a 4-on-3 from above the cage with the blue team coming in with four offensive players.
Hey, man, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure where Coach Abbott got it, but our guys love it. So we did that yesterday, and it's, you know, so you do it for 3 minutes of their play offense with a 3-on-2 and defense with a 4-on-3, and the team switch, and then the blue team would come in 3-on-2, and then the white team would come in 4-on-3.
Coach, I'm ready to sign off. I love that drill.
Cool. Yeah, it's great. You know, once they get the hang of it, it moves really fast.
How long did it take them to get the hang of it?
Probably a couple of minutes last year. You know, when we have a new drill, we'll explain it in the huddle for a couple of minutes, and then we'll walk through the first rep or two, and then we'll start to do it full speed. But now this is the second year of it, so it's just bringing the freshmen up to speed and making sure they understand, you know, how the transitions work and things like that.
So, do you publish your practice plans?
No, I don't. Do people do that? I don't know.
Yeah, it, you know, and again, that's something that goes back and forth for the guys we talk to, Coach. I mean, you know, some of the guys that are very analytical, guys like Pressler, guys like Alberici, whose personalities are naturally very analytical guys.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know about those two specifically, but, yeah, we got guys that are down to publishing practice plans now with when the players change pennies and blah, blah, blah. And,
wow.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we posted in the locker room, so guys have an idea of what's coming, but that's it.
Cool. So yesterday when you came out and opened up, where'd you go from there? Did you go back into your station stuff with the middies at one end and the attack on the poles at the other?
No, we actually did something else first called Loyola Drill, which I don't know if Charlie Toomey came up with it or Coach Cottle or who, but basically on either sideline, you've got a partner passing drill. So this is a good conditioner because there's a whole lot of bodies moving at the same time and balls. So on either sideline, bench side and off bench side, there's two guys that are about 10 yards apart. They're just throwing the ball back and forth as they run up the sideline. So they run about 70 yards from goal line to, you know, just above the far goal line. And there's a cage set up, let's say the south end of the field, two cages set up in those kind of alleys. And so the two guys will go back and forth, and then the guy who has it last will end up throwing it to the other guy who sets a pick for him, and he comes off a pick and shoots it. And so that's two of those things going on at the same time. And then as they get done, they then form three lines in the middle of the field on the north end, and they start a three-man weave. So they'll run that three-man weave from the goal line at the north end headed south toward the midfield line. And as they get to the midfield line, our defensive coordinator, Coach Aketa, will yell out one of the three names who has to get in the hole and play defense in a two-on-one.
Man, you're a creative guy these days, Coach.
I didn't. I'm just stealing stuff. I didn't make this up. It's a great drill, though.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I waver back and forth on the weave stuff, you know?
Yeah, me too. You know, I wouldn't say the quality of our weave is great. I don't think they get a lot of width and stuff, but it's a different movement that really just leads into a two-on-one. So,
yeah, I kind of got away from it under the premise that the drill needs to emulate a game situation, and we rarely threw the ball to a guy and then ran behind him.
Yeah, never.
You know what I mean?
That's a soccer move, maybe. But
I struggled with that, saying we're doing a drill that'll never happen in a game, and. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the rules on our website is your drill's got to emulate game situations, or one of the things we try and preach to coaches, you know, because the kids want to know why are we doing this, man. Hey, man, this happens in a game, and, you know, back to your parts of the whole dialogue and everything else.
Yep.
But then, you know, we started running that, which, you know, a lot of teams do, kind of an umbrella open set where the midi would pass and then undercut and the guy would come over.
Yep.
Or maybe he'd just be clearing, whatever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the three-man weave like basketball, but it was a weave to a degree that did emulate a game situation.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. It's about three out.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm totally confused about weaves.
I guess I am too now.
No. You know, 3D does a thing where the three guys run sideline to sideline in a warm-up. And I do that a lot, but the ball goes middle, outside, outside, middle,
yep.
outside. They stay in their lanes.
Yeah. I like that. It's better spacing. I guess, fundamental.
Well, and the guys on the outside are in this drill, even though, again, my philosophies have changed. You know, we're trying to old school, right, get those guys to focus on outside shoulder. So when they get down the field, they change lines. So one way down, if you're the outside, out your left, and the other, you know, when you come back, you're right.
Got it.
You know, and we have coaches on the field with balls, so if a guy drops it, you just toss him on.
Oh, cool.
It's purely a warm-up, you know, type of drill. But
yeah.
The other thing that's cool for the high school coaches that are listening that I know struggle, you know, one of the problems you have in high school lacrosse is, you know, your game starts at 6 and the track team left at 5:30, and by the time
right.
you get on the field, you got 20 minutes to warm up, you know.
Right, yep, yeah.
And that's a nice way to occupy your guys where they're getting, you know, literally 6 touches. So 12 touches down and back, if you run it 4 times, they got about 50 touches in 4 or 5 minutes, kind of the way I look at things.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And you can do that while your goalies are warming up. If you
run
those 3 guys like 15 yards apart up near the midfield, it's purely a logistical solution to having to play in 20 minutes, get your goalie the time he needs, get the other guys touching. You know, I can't really afford for them to get in a circle or get in lines and do traditional stretching and talk about, you know, how Lucy looked in school today, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a very good point.
You know, and I started with a whistle, and the whistles go bang, bang, bang. I mean, they're literally like 5 yards behind the group in front of them.
Really? Yeah, it's a little pressure on them to keep going.
Well, and the whistle thing creates, in my own warped way, that sense of urgency that you're getting from running a 3v2 out of the gate, right?
Yep.
I mean, automatically we're going, okay, here's our pace. I mean, we're in now. We're starting to get the game ready. You know?
Yeah, you're actually setting that cadence with the whistle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like it.
You know, you guys don't have that issue, you know, in terms of sending a goalie early to warm up.
We're lucky. Yeah, we generally have as much time and space as we need within reason.
Although it's another interesting question. What kind of warm-up guy are you, Coach? I never, you know, I watch all your stuff on TV, and I got an elliptical with a Apple TV flat panel above it. So, you know,
Go
back and all week I just watch NCAA lacrosse games, you know.
Yeah.
And
compare
them to the interviews I do with the coaches where they talk about, you know, these offenses and plays, and you realize – in the words of the great Lars Tiffany, we can talk about this till we're green, but nothing happens till somebody beats somebody anyway.
right.
The greatest quotes on my website, you know, from, as only Lars can deliver, you know.
Right.
He's very eccentric in his own way. I say that in the most positive, loving way I possibly can.
Yep.
But,
no, I agree.
Yeah, we were having a long conversation, and there's like dead silence on the podcast for like 8 seconds. He goes, yeah, but, you know. Nothing happens till somebody beats somebody anyway. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Right?
But anyway, you know, I was struck. You know, one year I had a speaking gig in leadership. I was doing the Pennsylvania Government Officials Association at Penn State, and it happened to be during playoff time, conference playoff time.
Oh, wow.
And Canela and UMass, I did the opening keynote and I did the closing keynote, so I had like 2 days in between where I was trying to attend workshops, but they were finance-oriented. I didn't understand anything they were saying. I don't have an Ivy League degree, unlike everybody on this call. And, you know, so I sent an email to, you know, both coaches I've done podcasts with, and I sent them an email saying, hey, man, oddly enough, I'm on campus. Can I come watch your practice? You know?
Oh, cool.
And, you know, it was kind of funny. Coach Tambroni was a little bit more concerned about, hey, man, you know, we're going to do scout stuff, and I'm counting on you not to shit, like, you know, what am I
right.
going to call? And I'll say, hey, guess what I saw?
Right.
Give me a t-shirt, and I'll give you the offense. But he doesn't know what it's going to be anyway, right? And
right.
I don't look good in burgundy anyway, so it doesn't make that difference a little bit. But, so it gets to be, I was there over Saturday, and it's the, I can't remember if it was the conference finals or the semis, and it was like year 2 of that new facility at Penn State, where the students were all sitting on the hillside. There was people in the bleachers on the one side. I mean, the facility's there. Everybody's redone them like you did yours. We talked last time. I mean, they're gorgeous, right? And
right.
I'm sitting on a hillside, right? And I always am looking for warm-up ideas and pregame ideas. And I get those questions on my site a lot. And so Penn State comes out like 50 minutes before the game.
Huh.
And they work like 20 minutes and there's 25 minutes. And then they go back in the locker room and they come back out like 15 minutes before the game. They get right into some transition stuff. Face-off guys are doing a little bit of final work. And boom, they go. Now, UMass comes out like 25 minutes before the game.
For the first
time? Trying to figure out what to do before the game starts. And
really?
afterwards, I talked to Canelo about it, you know, and he's going, hey, man, if we can't get ready in 25 minutes, we can't get ready. You know?
Good for him.
And to your, oh. And to your earlier point, there's no right or wrong. I mean, yeah, nobody's right and nobody's wrong. There's no, you know, one way to do it. But when do you bring the kids out of Penn?
We generally, well, we'll eat 4 hours before. So 1 o'clock start, we'll eat at 9, and then they'll be on their own for a little while. And then we'll kind of do like final reminders by unit, say around 11:30, 11:45, and then kind of final reminders about 5 of 12. And then generally we'll go out around noon, about an hour before the game starts, and do kind of the non-contact, low-impact right. part of the warm-up, and go back inside, put the pads on, and go back out at, say, I don't know, 12:35. We'll actually stretch, do like an 8-minute, 7-minute stretch, like dynamic, static warm-up, and then do kind of the contact part of it, like 3-on-2s, and do some kind of 6-on-6 run through stuff before the game. And that's basically our pregame routine.
Hey, can I change course on you here?
Sure.
One of the things I had in my notes from listening to the previous podcast was in the evolution of the way you're getting these teams prepared, you had gone back to maybe more ground ball work than you had previously, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
we talked about doing 2v1s and 2v2 ground balls into drills. And you started talking about a 2v2 ground ball into like a 4v3.
Mm-hmm.
And I interrupted you because I'm an idiot and never got back into it. So can you, and we talked about two-hand ground balls and playing on the turf and, you know, the nature of the 2v1s where, you know, high school coaches still run where two guys wail on the guy in the middle and the ball rolls mm-hmm. into the parking lot and 18 other guys
yeah.
stand there doing nothing. And,
yep.
You know, we see coaches doing mostly 1v1s and 2v2 ground balls. Can you talk a little bit about your ground ball drills and
sure.
has it evolved or changed?
It has evolved, and I guess we're probably a little bit more maybe pervasive in our approach to it. So we'll do those stations still once a week. We'll do our fundamental stations, and there will always be a ground ball station within that that can either be a competitive one-on-one or sometimes it's just repetition where we work on sprinting through a ground ball and throwing a pass out of it. And then, for instance, yesterday we did a 2-on-1 ground ball from a wing, from a face-off wing, that went into a 5-on-4 or a 6-on-5 at either end. And
right.
there were times, you know, I would say 25-35% of the time, the guy in the middle actually won the ground ball. And so that's a drill we like a lot. It's a full field drill that obviously incorporates some ground ball work. And then tomorrow we're probably going to do that same 2v2 ground ball into a 4-on-3, which is a staple of what we do because it gives us a little bit of ground ball work and emphasizes the importance of it, but also gives us that unsettled start to practice where we're getting the pace up but also working on some very fundamental things on offense and defense.
Yeah, so, Coach, I'm really curious. Can you lay that drill out for me, the 2v2
sure.
into the 4v3, where the guys are and how it works?
Yep, and again, it's a tribal thing, so we'll have two tribes in white and two tribes in blue, and we'll have a ground ball. So say we'll bring the two goals up to the restraining lines, and then those four lines alternating white and blue will be at the sideline, essentially at the midfield line, and one of the coaches will roll a ground ball out. They'll fight for it. And so, say blue picks it up, they will go into their offensive end to play 4-on-3. One of the two guys in white who are competing for the ground ball will go in and play defense. The other guy who was in white will drop out and go back into the back of the line. We'll play that out. Whatever happens, happens. And then essentially we'll rotate the guys out of there from the offensive end. So the guys that were essentially starting in on offense will be replaced by the two guys that picked up the ground ball.
So for lack of a better description, we got two attack and two defense at each end.
Correct.
And then the team that loses the ground ball, that guy has to play defense. The other guy's out of the drill, and we're in a 4v3 on that side.
Correct. Exactly. And they get 1 point for ground ball,
You got to be a little quicker with that correct call, man, because both of us can't be confused here.
Well, I think you got it. And so we'll keep score. They get points for the ground ball and 1 point for ground ball, 1 point for a goal. And it gets pretty pretty competitive.
And once it goes down to one end, it never goes back to the other end. It's just a new group coming out. So it's
correct.
Pretty rapid. Yeah, rapid
yep.
fire.
Yeah.
Cool.
And we'll frequently give the offensive team one cradle with the ball or 1 second, which will, again, enhance the pace of it.
I don't understand that. You mean like what we used to call – I'm older than you, man, by far. What we used to call the hippo look, right?
Yep.
Where the guy can't have a stick more than one step? Is that what you're saying?
Similar, but we avoid the step thing because it gets people to stop running. And so we just give them generally a time allotment to keep them running. Sometimes a cradle, but usually just we say 1 second with the ball, and they'll have to just keep the ball moving. It not only forces the guy with the ball to move it, but it also forces his teammates to get open for him.
Right. Man. You remember in our last call, I was telling you how melancholy I get after these calls because I always think about all the stuff I should have been doing and how stupid I was, and you were laughing.
Yes, and I do the same thing.
I'm already there.
Yeah.
I'm already there.
Yeah, we had some new drill we did last year. I'm like, wow, we really wish we'd done that 20 years ago.
Yeah, like I said, I think that every time I get off the phone with a coach, man.
Yeah.
All right. Every time the last two times we've talked, the man up has come in at 4.11, right? I think the NCAA average is like 28 or 29%.
Uh-huh.
Again, you were, like a lot of coaches do, integrating the man up work into the entire practice plan rather than doing it at the end of practice or before mm-hmm. practice or something like that. Do you do that two or three times during the practice?
Usually not. Like if we can, it depends on the time of year. The fall is nice. We're just trying to get better and figure out who's gonna play. So we're not worried about the scouting part of it now. So what we like to do is a progression. So we might do that made up in the beginning, in the first half. And so we could do that 4-3 ground ball drill into maybe a half field build up type of drill. And then man up, man down. So we're kind of in that unsettled mode and things, the ball is moving, the defense is talking. And then after that, we might start a half-field settled segment where we could do, like yesterday, we did one-on-ones, three-on-threes, and then like five-on-fives, and then into kind of a settled six-on-six teaching part. That part-hole thing again.
Man, I'm hearing a lot more about the guys running more 5v5s.
Really?
In the first 4 or 5 years that we were on the air, yeah.
Yeah, we do more of it, too. We have a version
kind
of
started
it where...
with a substitute strategy, you know? I mean,
yep.
I think guys were running it, you know, and not all, but a lot of coaches are like this, right? If we're if we're coming across the midfield line, let's get into a quick look before we sub.
Yeah.
And if we
no
get
doubt.
A quick look, let's get it. If we don't get it, then pull it out and let's run our sub pattern or, you know, however we're going to do it. Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah. A lot of people are just actually playing 5-on-5.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, which camp are you in? Are you running more just straight 5v5 drills?
Well, we do the 5-on-5 drills really more for pace than we do for a strategy or a tactic. We didn't play a lot of 5-on-5, honestly, last year. We just felt like our 6-on-6 was pretty good, and we didn't want to waste time screwing around with our face-off guy standing over in the corner. But I certainly see the value in it. We've done it in the past, and we've had teams do it to us effectively. We just felt like we had, you know, we weren't necessarily better attacking 5-on-5 than we were 6-on-6. You know, there's obviously a space, issue there. The spacing's a little better 5-on-5, but in terms of our kind of synchronicity and flow on offense, it was generally better when we had our six guys out there doing what we do.
Well, and for me, man, it just seemed like – I'm trying to think of who it was that I did a podcast, and, man, he sold me on that idea.
Really?
And and then, you know, we ran it in practice. It was okay. And then when we tried to integrate it in the game, it created more confusion for the high school kids because,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that moment of where you're bringing the ball, it might be it's a clear, maybe it's a ground ball, maybe it's a face-off, maybe it's whatever it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The guy would be like 15 yards from the expanded box, and he wanted to come off, and then he's thinking, no, I'm supposed to stay.
Right, right, exactly.
And I'm thinking in my head, no, stay, this is what we're working on.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, well, it might be better if you come off, no, stay, come off, you know. And then I just said, you know, I'm much more of a run-and-gun guy, although you're quickly falling into that camp, aren't you, at 46 shots a game last year?
I would think so. I mean, we would just all we would say is let's play fast. We didn't have a number of shots we wanted to get to or a number of possessions we wanted to get to. You know, we just wanted the ball to move quickly and the bodies to move quickly and play at a high rate of speed. And I agree with your last point. You know, we want to keep things as simple as we can keep them and still be effective. And the more our guys are thinking, the less they're playing.
Yeah, I couldn't. It wasn't the players. It was a coaching issue. It was over my head. I couldn't handle it.
Right, right.
And it's almost interesting, isn't it? I mean, for the older guys like me, and obviously, you know, if you diminish the effectiveness of the or take out the influence of the shot clock, then you can't really do that. It's there. But, I mean,
right.
At the end of the day, the Ivy has gone from almost a 6v6 leg to a transition leg.
Certainly Cornell and Penn and Yale seem to, and Brown too, to a certain extent, same way. Then Princeton's fast, but they're also very good 6-on-6. Princeton and Yale both, I think, can kind of kill you either way, which is partly their personnel and partly their, I guess, their style. So, but yeah, I mean, the offenses in our league are very, very good.
Man, it's crazy, man. Last year, who did they play? Yale came to Atlanta and played.
Oh, Villanova, maybe? No.
No, it was, I want to say Marquette, but it wasn't Marquette. It was, maybe it was. Anyway, so we did a thing for, you know, this Copperhead company. We got tickets and gave everybody, all the kids, a free T-shirt in, you know, for a $15 ticket package. And, you know, we were handing out T-shirts, but we had league the day before, so I couldn't go watch and practice. Shoot, who was that? Anyway, I you know, I was invited down on the field, and
cool.
God, I just couldn't believe the size of those Yale attack guys. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, seeing them on TV, you know, Andy Shea has probably been as good as anybody of all time in terms of supporting our site and supporting me, and
cool. It's
just been wonderful. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, my wife had a tumor taken out of her neck, the size of your fist, and you know, I was getting text messages from him and Lars. I just done podcasts.
No
with him. Hey man, how's your day doing? Stuff like that. Yeah.
And then cool. Yeah, last a good time guy.
Talked, oh man, last time I talked to him, he said I had nothing left to tell you, man. You know my offense, my practices better than I do.
And
I'm not suggesting you do this by any stretch of the imagination, and I don't want to say anything that's inappropriate, but you know, because of my relationship with Coach Shea, and you know, because of his philosophies on transition, you know, he used to say, if you're not covered, get covered.
Yep.
And all the kids down here think I'm talking about a Waffle House dish, you know.
right.
But we just kind of hit it off.
He's a good guy.
And then, so the last time, the last podcast, he goes, I can't do a podcast with you. But what he did was he set me up on their practice film.
Oh, cool.
I shouldn't say this, I guess. And he trusted I would never, you know, I mean, so anyway, yeah, when I'm doing my elliptical during the week, I get to, every once in a while, I'll just put in the Yale practice from the day before.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And I can watch full practice. Now, I mean, you know, those cameras are way up in the boondoggles, you know, and you can't really hear what the guys are saying. But, you know, I know a lot of his drills. But anyway, last time he's going, okay, I got nothing left to tell you. Okay.
that's great.
You really need to talk to my defensive coordinator. And, yeah, kudos to him and his job, man. I mean, that just turned out to be a great podcast, too. But.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, he's done an unbelievable job there. Been there, obviously, a long time. And the last 3 or 4 years, they've really taken it to another level.
No, man, it's all good. It's all good. So So, Coach, talk to me about the prospect camps.
Yeah, we run two in the fall, one in the summer, and then we have a bigger camp here. We're lucky we have a bubble, so we have a big indoor full field facility
right.
where we'll have a few more kids, and we bring guys in from maybe a dozen staffs and Ivy League and Big Ten and different places. So we're doing some of that stuff, and then summertime we have one more prospect clinic and a smaller overnight camp. So we're doing the same things I'm sure a lot of people are doing, and we do recruit pretty heavily out of those things. We had one a couple weeks ago, and we got another one coming up in 3 weeks. So a big part of what we do here is as part of our recruiting.
You know, one of the reasons I love talking to you is, number one, you just seem like a great person. And number two, you know, you're always pretty honest and frank about things that are changing and why they need to change and so on and so forth. I probably get 6 emails a week, or excuse me, a month. These are from coaches, not parents, right?
Uh-huh.
And the coach is saying, hey, man, you know, we're struggling. And, you know, we want the kids to have a travel team deal, but the travel team tournaments seem to be such a huge – money grab, and certainly hit and miss on any player from a that's not on a list or a non-traditional area, you know, just happen to be seen by a coach unless he goes 5-3, you know, that game.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, and I sit on those sidelines too, man. And, you know, at half, you know, the coach turns the chair around and watches the other field, all those kind of things. If
right.
a coach, and let's say we're talking about a high school coach here that loves his kids and cares about his kids and does everything he can to continue to improve. I mean, so many high school coaches are hypocrites, right? I mean, they want the kids to get on a wall and do the weight training, and then they don't do anything to improve their own skills. You know, they're not listening
right.
to Jamie Monroe and all that free content he puts out. The entire internet is filled with free content now, not just my stuff, but everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know. So
yeah,
the coaches
no doubt.
Are asking, you know, if you were to prioritize – and I just got one of these about fall ball. If you were to prioritize the fall travel, picking out prospects or showcases, and maybe you're not comfortable doing it. If not, we'll just move on. But what would you tell a parent from a non-traditional area in comparing where they spend their dollars in those three areas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question because it's going to vary a little bit from family to family, based on obviously where they're located and their financial means, but also where they are in the process. If they, you know, have been in contact with a couple of schools and they have a list of, you know, they may be a top 3 or 4, then they should definitely go to those places and attend their prospect days. But if they're, you know, high school freshman or sophomore and still earlier on, some of the showcases can be helpful, but you just don't know. It's a little bit of a needle in a haystack, and something that's probably more effective earlier on in the process. But you just don't know who's going to be there. You don't know how you're going to play. So it's a little less dependable in terms of what you're going to get out of it. But, you know, for certain people, it's worth it. And then the club team thing is good. And it gives you a great way to travel back east if you're from out west, for instance, or down south, and get you in front of some coaches. But again, you know, it's a little bit of a needle in a haystack because you don't know when you're going to play and how you're going to play and who's going to be there and stuff like that.
I'm leaning more towards the prospect camps, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
In my recommendations.
It's more of a sure thing. I mean, you know what you're going to get. And the nice thing is there's always coaching. At least ours are about 50-50. We spend the first half of it actually teaching and doing drills and finding out how they react to that. And then the second half of it's game. So I think it's a safer
honestly,
bet.
I think that's changed. You know, I think in the 2-3 years ago, the prospect camps would come out and play.
Right.
And I think now, you know, they're getting morning of instruction and afternoon of play.
Good.
There's different models out there, but I mean,
right.
You know, seeing more and more of that kind of stuff.
Right.
The only caveat, and again, maybe you're not comfortable commenting on it. The only caveat is it seems like if a kid sends an email to a coach, it's almost like an auto response. Hey, our prospect camp is such and such.
Yeah.
Ours
yep.
is 2 days. It's $500, you know, and
yeah.
you get a free penny.
Yeah. And then some
you
of them are.
Hot dogs at lunchtime. But you,
yeah.
you know, you got to
yep.
pay for a hotel. And airfare, too, you know. I
yeah,
mean,
It is a lot, and some of those are auto responses. You're right, and you can tell. I think you can tell which programs are doing it just to make money, and you can tell which ones do use it to identify prospects and really try to recruit and stuff. You can based on how it's set up, how many kids they're bringing in, how much they're charging, things like that.
Well, and honestly, you know, the majority of the kids are not D1 guys.
Right, they're just not.
You know, and to spend that money. You know, I kind of shy away from it, you know.
Yep, yeah, makes sense.
Kids in the South, just because I love Coach Galloway so much as a person.
Yeah, he's a good man.
Yeah, the kids in the South, you know, from here, they can drive down to Jacksonville, do a one-day camp, spend one night in a hotel, and drive back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Good point.
And if the kid's a sophomore and he's trying to get a feel for how all that works and looks, it's a reasonable what's the right word? Compromise, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
Where they
good.
A little bit of beef. Yeah.
And good introduction to it.
Well, and I always get, you know, great, great comments back from Coach. You know, hey,
oh,
man, this kid blew me away. You know, I just had a kid down there. Again. But you're right. You know, he can't carry for crap. You know, he's a post-up shooter, a guy you exchange in pairs. You know, if you put him in the right place as a right-handed post-up shooter, and he's so much more than that, but as a right-handed post-up shooter where he's exchanging with that midi in a pairs look, or we're getting him above GLE, or, you know, that's a particular kid that, you know, it's kind of funny, man. I don't know why more high school coaches don't focus on the wing dodges.
Generally, we'll be honest. I mean, most of us, you know, if the kid's not good enough, we don't want to waste his time sending us emails or waste our time entertaining it. So
I actually did leadership for Salisbury. That was pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Back when Maddie McGinnis was still there as assistant AD. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, wonderful. So, Coach, how many freshmen did you bring in this year?
We have a big class. I think it's 14, so. Big group.
Do you go with a preconceived number on that?
We usually get a certain number of spots, but in this case we had a walk-on or two, and then we carried a couple of kids over from the previous class and the next class. Like we're only going to bring in 8 in the 2020 class. So it will they allow us to vary it a little bit. So sometimes it'll be.
I mean, we try, as you know, we try and keep them timeless, but you return a lot of guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We had a very good senior class and graduated a very good group, but we have a lot of guys back, some key guys, like our number one cover defenseman is back and our face off guy is back and we had a pretty good freshman midi who's back. So yeah, we feel good about what we're building on. Hopefully we can get some more people, you know, I guess indoctrinated into what we do. Some of these freshmen, we think we have a couple that could help us again this year. So.
Well, God, Coach, you're amazing. And I just love watching your team play. And I just thought you had an incredible year last year. I mean, just.
Yeah, thank you.
The thing about your season last year that impressed me was, as much as anything, was the consistency.
Yeah, I think a lot of that started with the face-off. You know, great kid, Kyle Gallagher. He just did a really good job, you know, from the first game, you know, against Maryland. He was consistent.
Well, it
kind of
depends on whether you think a 620 faceoff percentage is good.
Yeah, I don't know too many people that wouldn't think that. You know, for us, that was a high watermark in the 10 years I've been here, now 11. So him winning faceoff and then.
You get my coaching together and not get to 620.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, and he gets a ton of credit, and Coach Page is our assistant, works with the faceoff guys, and he did a really good job. And I think he just, you know, once he had some early success, he just kind of got rolling. And obviously Yale has a really good faceoff guy, and Penn State and some of the teams we play, he wasn't, you know, 62% every game, but he had some where he's higher than that and then some when he was a little bit lower. So.
Well, again, I don't want to talk about specifics, but – man, both those Yale games down the stretch were incredible lacrosse games to watch for a fan's perspective. Just incredible.
No doubt. And even the first of the regular season one here might have been more dramatic, only because we were losing by one, and they had the ball. It was like a minute and a half left, and we didn't double-team them, and we ended up getting the stop, and probably our best middie, get Tyler Dunn, clears the ball, and he doesn't pass it. I'm thinking about calling a timeout, not call a timeout. And, you know, it's literally 3-2-1, and he shoots it as the clock hits zero and it goes in. So we go to overtime. And it was a 3-overtime game, and it was just a battle between two really good teams, and neither team worried about losing. Both teams kind of playing to win, and then we ended up having two more games just like it in the Ivy finals and then the quarterfinals.
No doubt. Coach, how many times a week do you work on that kind of scenario? The
end of game?
We're down a goal, 6v6. We're up a goal, 6v6.
Yeah, ironically, we did it yesterday, but that was really the first time we'd done it in the fall. And we scrimmage a lot, so instead of, you know, drawing things up and artificially creating the scenarios, we try to let them happen over the course of a scrimmage. And if we want to work on more of them, we might do 3 5-minute scrimmages instead of 1 15-minute scrimmage. So it kind of depends.
Okay.
Yeah. So those things are so there's so many different components to it. It's hard to draw up every possible scenario there in terms of, especially with the shot clock now, it changes the way you approach it a fair amount. So we just try to put the guys in the situations and give them some basic principles to use and kind of let them go.
Well, and at the high school level, I think the biggest thing, you know, we run it 2 or 3 times a week to take the freak out nature out of it.
Mm-hmm.
If they get doubled on offense, number one. But I think more importantly, to let them know exactly how long 30 seconds is when your anxiety level is through the roof.
Right. No doubt. And
yeah,
those are things we'll create,
you know,
especially if you're clearing the ball, there might be 12 seconds left and the goalie might make a save. He might just hook it the length of the field. And I'm like, well, no, 12 seconds is a lot of time. You don't need to throw the ball down there aimlessly. Find somebody. You can clear the ball in less than 5 seconds if you need to, and then still have some time to generate a shot. So,
oh, man, Coach, you rock. The showcase
Thanks,
stuff, is that on the Penn website?
There's a link to it. We have a website that's QuakerLacrosseCamps.com that houses all the information and stuff, but you can find it at PennAthletics.com.
Quaker Lacrosse, is it camps.com you said, or just
camps.
QuakerLacrosse.com?
Quaker Lacrosse Camps, yep.
Yeah, for all the coaches out there, we'll have a link to this on the website and everything else.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
And, hey, listen, I want to be respectful of your time. I don't know what to say. If you knew me better, you would know I'm not much of a patronizer. Actually, I'm kind of an asshole. But, I just, man, I got 2 or 3 great drill ideas. I got to practice at 6 tonight. I can't wait to throw them in. All good stuff. All good
cool
stuff. And just wish you continued success at Penn, man. Like I said.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. And happy to help. If you have questions about the drills after you do them, give me a shout. We can talk more.
I usually do. I think I got these down, but I usually – we were talking about Shea, man. One time he was doing those – he had little boxes set up all over the field, like a 4v3 or a 3v2. You know, run to the cone, roll back and pass, you know, different variations of it with two guys in the middle. Just basically I got ball, you know, and then recovery into the inside of the box, not really trying to take it away.
Right.
And I can't remember what question I had about some of his reps, and he sent me a like a napkin with a drawn out on as a picture.
Oh wow!
And I put it on the website to just keep it real. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of different
yeah
ways to come up with these things. So.
Anyway, man, you rock. Thank you so
thanks,
much.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Before I have you back, but you know, you're dealing with an old person here, so who knows, you know.
Well, I'm ready anytime you want.
Yeah, I used to focus all my time on lacrosse. Now I worry about, like, the special porridge nights at the old folks' home. You know, because if you're not back by 6, you know, you don't get the brown sugar to put on the porridge. So that's the biggest thing I freak out about.
I hope you don't miss the brown sugar from your practice tonight.
Hey, actually, I just made that story up. I'm a diabetic. I don't eat sugar anyway, but yeah.
Hey, that's right.
Thanks, Coach.
Hi, Mike. Black Thanks
Coach
for having
Mike.
Me.
Black Coach, you rock. Hey, don't interrupt me. I'm in my big sign-off here, man.
Sorry.
Black Coach Mike. BlackCoachMike.com. Remember, you got an unbelievable unbelievable responsibility, an opportunity to influence the lives of your young people. Take it very seriously every day. Think of coaching as a craft. And while your kids are getting better, you get better too. Until next time, special thanks, Coach Murphy. Salax Coach Mike, SalaxCoachMike.com. Coach, you rock, man.
All right. See you, Mike. Thanks a lot for having me.
Hey, have a great practice.
Yeah, man. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. See you.